Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Before there was IMDb.com, there was Zach and Dustin.
Congrats! You found $2 Late Fee, the best 80s movies podcast in the world.
We revisit our favorite 80s movies.
Sometimes 90s.
And soundtracks from our youth. And then we interview our favorite people who helped make them. All in the spirit of nostalgic positivity.
Thanks for listening.
Wyatt and Gary were a little unpopular, so they decided to do a little something about it.
She's alive! Alive!
I'm gonna show you guys the time of your life.
It was the biggest mistake they ever made, and the best thing that ever happened to them.
It's purely sexual.
Weird Science, rated PG-13. Now at select theaters, check newspapers.
Season 5, we're here. We made it. Did we make it? Are we here?
I'm present. I'm present. I believe that the fifth year, the present for the fifth year is wood, something wood.
Oh.
So you
really?
Can put that away in your pants. No, I was thinking, you know, maybe like mutual cutting boards or something like that.
Yes, that could work.
So wood is good. Wood is appropriate.
Wood is good. Wood is so good. Yeah. And it's kind of perfect that you make slightly a teenage sex jokes because this is a teenage sex comedy.
Yes, it is. Weird Science, 1985.
We have done, I believe, three or four movies back to back from 1985, ending in season 4.
What?
We did Rocky IV. Oh. We did Tough Turf, I believe, was 85 as well.
Weird.
Yeah. Bam, bam, bam. So many 85 movies going into the new season, rolling into season 5 now. Oh my gosh.
It's funny. When we started doing this, I really paid attention to years. And I was like, oh, you know, we can't have too many years back to back and all this stuff. And now I'm just like, I don't know. It doesn't even register.
In my mind, it works better now because I'm only pulling a couple fun facts at the end of the episode. And then we wrap up the month with a fun trivia based around not just the year, but more about the movie. You know, it could be a theme when we do our trivia on YouTube. And if you're not subscribed to our YouTube page, go to our YouTube page and subscribe. Hit that subscribe button. Like a couple of our videos, watch a couple of our videos. They're really good.
You know, 85's come up a lot, for sure.
85 has come up as many times, I'd say, as 87, perhaps. And 87 tends to be one of our more favorite years with movies.
Well, right. We were really big into the 87s because we were like 35th anniversary of this, 35th anniversary of that. Of course, now in 2024... we're talking about 40-year anniversaries of movies.
40-year anniversaries.
It just freaks me out. It just freaks me out, man. It's not in a good way. I don't feel great about the fact that Ghostbusters turns 40 this year. I don't like it.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
Well, let's unpack that. What is it? What is it that makes you feel uncomfortable about that?
Well, because it's just like it feels impossible to me. You know, like when we started doing this podcast – and we're like talking about nostalgia 30 years ago. That seems fine, right? 30 years ago, whatever. We're not too removed. We're not too close to it. We're just like, that's a nice sweet spot. Now, 40 years removed from something just feels kind of impossible in a way when it comes to 80s movies. It doesn't feel, you know, it doesn't feel right. It feels like, you know, not too long ago, I'm dressing up like, you know, Dr. Venkman. For I'm actually making up a Halloween because I never dressed up like Dr. Venkman.
Oh, I was going to say, if you did, that would have been amazing. Like Dr. Venkman in his casual clothes. That would have been amazing.
That would be a really good costume.
Dr. Venkman, I would love to see that.
In his casual clothes. Sold. That's this year's Halloween. Anyway, I just, yeah, it, you know, 40 years is so significant and, you know, here we are. I mean, I guess we glossed over some because we, you know, movies that came out in 81, 82, 83. We didn't really talk about, there's no 40 year. We haven't done any 40 years.
I guess if we looked at the list, we would probably go, oh yeah, that one stands out. Oh yeah, that one stands out. But we haven't covered a lot of those movies, I don't think, because they don't resonate with us the way a movie like Weird Science does, for example. You know, Rad, Thrashin, Rocky IV, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
It's the age. It's the age probably when we watch these movies, you know. I'm kind of freaking out a little bit. Not really, but I'm in the same boat with you. Because a friend of mine just messaged me not that long ago, and he said, are you going to the 30th reunion for high school, for our 30-year reunion?
Right, right.
I said, oh, my God, it's been 30 years?
You wow. graduated high school in 94.
Yes.
Yeah.
And right. I said, no, I'm not. So I have right. no desire.
Well, you could probably impress all your bullies.
Oh, I did at my 10-year.
Oh, at your 10-year, you impressed everybody. All right, so you got that
I
out of the way.
I went to the 10-year. Yeah, or maybe was it 5? No, it was a 10-year. Yeah. Yeah, it was my 10-year. And I was happy about, like, showing up, having my moment, and then leaving. You know?
Okay.
Everybody who, you know, was cool in high school wasn't so cool anymore.
Right, I assume you were shirtless.
Of course.
Yeah, and...
Actually, I was wearing... somewhat of a tuxedo shirt with a very open shirt with but I was big into necklaces at the time.
Okay. So maybe it wasn't we need too to interview far removed. Some of these classmates to see what kind of impression you left.
Oh, like, yeah.
Zach is a pimp now. Literally.
I was a rock star, man. I was living in Los Angeles and, you know, had my long hair and my highlights and feeling cool.
Okay. Right. Right. So, for a timeline thing, it's my 20 years in LA this month.
Oh, wow.
Is that
Happy
you?
Happy anniversary.
Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. Next week.
It's my 20 years as well.
Right. Cause you said 10 years, you said you were living in LA when you went to your 10 years. So that would be,
yeah. I just moved to LA. It was the summer of 2004. Yeah.
Okay, so you just moved to LA. You're like, I got time for a tuxedo shirt, and I'm gonna go back.
He's from Express.
I'm gonna go back and all right. So now 20 years beyond that, you don't need to be going back for your 30.
No, the only time I want to go back is when I'm listening to that Eddie Money song.
Would there be any friends that you'd want to see there outside of, you know, the ones you already see? No.
A handful of friends, but not enough for me to go, oh yeah, I want to go back to Monta Vista. I was thinking about when we were getting ready to record this episode, I was thinking, oh, did we cover Weird Science or discuss it when we talked about our top 5 bullies episode? And in that episode, which we recorded, I think 2 or 3 years ago, I detailed a lot of fun, not so fun moments from my high school time, or my time in high school.
It's all very pertinent, so, I think. This movie, talking about bullies, talking about going back.
This movie triggered me a little bit.
yeah. I mean, this movie is very bully heavy. Everyone's a bully.
Very bully heavy. It's about sex and bullies, basically.
Yeah, sex, bullies, and nerds. And nerds.
And nerds, yeah.
Which is interesting because I don't own Weird Science physical copy. I don't. I'm not a card carrying Weird Science member officially. So I had to stream it. And in the description for the streaming, I thought it was really interesting because it was like, it was just one of those classic things of like, nobody watched this or nobody has any idea. Cause it just said like two computer hackers make a woman and learn the ways of love or something. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
What?
Two computer hackers. Yeah. It's really doesn't encapsulate this movie at all.
I'd like to call this a teenage version of Mary Poppins.
Well, no one creates Mary Poppins, right?
No, but she just kind of magically appears.
Right. That's interesting because Mary Poppins kind of like goes where she's needed, like where there's kids in trouble that need her help. She appears, she does her business, and then she's flies off to the next one. Now this has like the Frankenstein, you know, right? It's literally referencing Dr. Frankenstein. It's alive. Yeah. She's alive. With, you know, and spoiler alert, it's like, you know, they create Lisa and then it is like, well, I've done my job. I'll be moving on like Mary Poppins.
Yeah. And there's tears, like the kids crying at the end of Mary Poppins. And I mean,
yeah,
we have a lot to talk about in the problematic department with this movie. But okay. Before we get to all of that stuff, it's our season 5 premiere. Welcome back, everybody. We didn't go anywhere. We took our month off, but we had a month of bonus programming on our $2 late fee feed with Territory Marks and our Comic-Con panels.
We gave you no time to miss us.
No time, but enough time for you to go, what have these guys been up to since?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Last week. No.
No, actually, no.
There's no difference for you guys, right?
It is for us, though. Like actually having a proper episode where we talk about a movie.
We haven't talked about a movie in a while. Yes.
It's been a while.
That is true.
Yeah. So there you go. And obviously we always connect. If you're new to the show, welcome. We always connect whatever movie we're doing with the upcoming guest. Our upcoming guest will be Suzanne Snyder next week. She, of course, was in Weird Science and a lot of other movies as well that we talk about in the interview with Suzanne. So next week you'll hear all of that.
She plays Deb, the blonde love interest of...
Not Hilly.
That's Judy Aronson. Yes.
Yes.
Deb is the love interest of Anthony Michael Hall's character, Gary. Eventually
Gary.
That's what she becomes the love interest, but
yeah,
certainly doesn't start off that way.
No, she does not. And dare I say, it's very authentic when it comes to the way boyfriends and girlfriends worked in high school. Oh my God, should I date him because he's popular? Oh my God. He's cool. And if we don't date each other, then like no one's going to talk to us anymore.
Yeah.
But that's a real thing.
It's pretty funny because, if you are tuning in for the first time, welcome, welcome. It's important to note that Weird Science probably is up there as far as more of a mainstream summer movie. We don't always get this level of, mainstreamdom.
No, we don't. And in fact, we have guests on our show that are in very well-known mainstream movies, and we tend to go a little bit more on the cult side or B side.
Right, a little more obscure. I mean, certainly A-list Hollywood and stuff. But like John Hughes? Like, totally. No, we haven't touched John Hughes. This is our first John Hughes movie. Yes.
You're right, because I was thinking about, when we talk about Elon, for example, talk about Wildlife was, even though it's considered a cult movie.
Who plays Wyatt?
Mainstream Elon cult
Mitchell
movie.
Smith
plays Wyatt. Yep, and right after, this is a year after the Wildlife because that came out in 1984, I believe. But I think when we were looking at Suzanne Snyder's kind of resume of work, we thought, yeah, we could do something a little bit more off kilter, like Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Or we could do something more mainstream for our season 5 premiere. Last year's season premiere was Pretty Woman, and that is as mainstream as it gets. I think this is probably, even though I know this is a very popular movie across the board, it's one of the more raunchy John Hughes movies out of his body of
work. It is. It's very raunchy. You know, presumably, if you're listening to this, you've seen Weird Science, right? You're not coming in cold.
Right.
But if you are, that's fine too, because we're going to walk you through the bullet points, the major points. But it is important to say, too, that we had last season, Robert Russler was a guest on our show. Robert Russler plays Max, one of the bullies, along with Robert Downey Jr. He shared a lot of stories about how this film changed his life. So it is like kind of like we talked about it a little bit, but just with Robert Russler. So if you want to, we really primarily talked about Thrashin', which is another, you know, amazing movie. But Robert, you know, it was like one of those, like, I'm about to give up acting, gets the audition, lands the audition, boom, I have an 80s career.
Yeah, I would suggest going back and listening to that interview if you haven't already. If you are a fan of this movie and you found us because, oh, I love Weird Science and I'm going to check these guys out. Because Robert, like you said, Dustin, gave a lot of insight into his experience with Weird Science. I don't think we even intended to talk about Weird Science as much as we did with him. But then, of course, getting Suzanne on, she has her own perspective as well. And you'll hear that next week. But yeah, it's cool. Like, I think in a way the universe was saying, you got to talk about Weird Science. You got to talk about Weird Science. And then I watched it. And to be honest with you, it was the first time I had watched it in at least 10 years. You know, maybe 20. Maybe 20. Probably not. I think I probably watched it
before you went to your 10-year reunion. And that's probably the last time. Just to get pumped up.
I'm sure I did. And I will say when I was a kid, though... When I was 9, I probably saw it when I was 10, at least 10. I watched this a lot, and it probably contributed to a big part of my puberty.
That's why you went through puberty. It accelerated you.
It definitely did.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally the same way. You know, this movie, huge rotation, you know, quoting all the things. Of course, it's interesting to watch it now contextually and be like, oh, I didn't understand that. Or I didn't, you know, there's just a lot of moments in this movie where even we're referencing certain things. I think this movie taught me what the word catatonic meant. I remember that significantly. Yeah.
Really? Really? I
remember being like, thank you, Bill Paxton.
That's funny.
What a great use of catatonic in a movie. But, you know, yeah, rewatching it now with those fresh eyes, you do see... a lot of problematic language, situations, a lot of problems. Just a lot of problems. And even from a story perspective, it's like, wait, what? That's how they made Lisa? Oh, okay.
I didn't know you were going to go directly to that problematic part. I thought you were going to go to the part of like, you know, one moment Gary's complaining about how he has no money, and the next minute they're throwing $100 bills at people in the blues bar. So, we don't need to like necessarily talk about a whole lot of backstory or behind the scenes stuff, but John Hughes was not, you know, you guys all know John Hughes' resume, right? Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink. For me, Some Kind of Wonderful.
Ferris Bueller.
Et cetera, et cetera. Ferris Bueller, Dutch.
Oh my God.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, he was getting ready to make Breakfast Club soon after this movie. And I think that was the one that was maybe more near and dear to his heart. It's so weird seeing Breakfast Club now. Oh, 16 right. Candles, right? It's so weird seeing knowing Breakfast Club came out the same year and Anthony Michael Hall looks so different. In this one, like what a haircut can do, a haircut and fashionable clothes can do to really change your appearance. Cause he doesn't look the same to me. He looks like he's at least a year older in Weird Science than he does in Breakfast.
Yeah. I mean, I do wonder about that. It does feel like they did shoot this, you know, maybe a couple of years apart, because there's even a scene in this movie where, you know, Gary's parents have, his dad forgets who he is conveniently. And, And mom is holding up Anthony Michael Hall's headshot from, you know, 16 Candles. And you know, and you're like, wow, like that's even that's the same guy. Right. Cause 16 Candles, he's like teeny. Breakfast Club, a little bigger.
He's 16 in Weird Science.
Right.
He was 16. He and Elon, well, he might've been 17, but he and Elon are both teenagers when they made this movie.
Yeah.
And then Kelly LeBrock, the star of this, who we may or may not have mentioned in the beginning, but Kelly LeBrock, the star, she was 23 when she made this movie, or 23 or 24.
Right. Well, her character is certainly 23, so.
And she's making out with Elon at one point.
A 15-year-old. Right.
That's my problematic thing.
Right. That's real. Yeah. You're like a 23-year-old woman wanting to make out with a 15-year-old. Now, of course, if you are following along with the story, you're saying, well, he made her, you know, these guys. Okay, guys, here, just a quick break. Here's the premise for you.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know what Weird Science is about, you've got Gary and Wyatt, Anthony Michael Hall and Alana Mitchell Smith. Those guys play Gary and Wyatt, two down on their luck losers, if you will, who are tired of the loser life, and they decide one Friday night to make a girl on Wyatt's computer. And they do, and Lisa is born. She's gorgeous. She's played by Kelly LeBrock. And instantly, overnight, their lives get better because Lisa also has these magical powers that are never explained. We just kind of go with it. Like, Lisa can do whatever she wants, whenever she wants. That's kind of what she says at some point, you know, like, I can do whatever I want. It's all about, like, the growth of Gary and Wyatt together as friends and, you know, popularity. What's the true meaning of, you know, what you have, friendship, high school, you know, what's it all about? There have been a lot of reports that John Hughes, you know, was more focused on Breakfast Club. That's the movie he did want to make. You can kind of see how this becomes, you know, almost an afterthought. It's just a raunchy teen comedy that rolls along at a pretty good pace.
It's brisk. It's really brisk. You were saying that he was more focused on Breakfast Club. Breakfast Club came out in February of 85. Weird Science came out in August of 85.
Okay, interesting. Right.
You know, notoriously, February is a terrible month for movies to be released. So I'm curious about that. But yeah, like the pacing of this, it does move along really quickly.
Yeah, because you kind of go from like Lisa's creation to like, let's go to the mall to, you know, let's have a party to... you know, the aftermath.
We have our girlfriends and then the movie ends, yeah. Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's really over the course of a weekend, I think, if you're really tracking it, you're like, they create her on Friday and I think is the party Saturday night?
Yeah, yeah. Because Chet's in town, the parents are out of town because they're Wyatt has a older sister and an older brother. Chet, played by Bill Paxton, rest in peace. Let's be honest, the true highlight of this movie, like beyond a shadow of a doubt, the best part of Weird Science is Chet.
Is Chet, yep.
But yeah, he's there to watch Gary and Wyatt, mostly Wyatt. And also, yeah, they're two nerdy kids who quote unquote, you know, can never get a girl. But they are two nerdy, privileged kids. At least Wyatt is. And this is a little bit of the world that John Hughes paints as well in a lot of his movies is this privileged world.
Right.
I think that's why I loved Some Kind of Wonderful. And I'm hoping we cover that movie later this year.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe we can get Craig Sheffer on the show, or Leah Thompson.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Or Eric Stoltz, shoot for the moon.
Absolutely.
But like this world of privilege, I'm because the movie opens up in Wyatt's home and I'm like, damn, this guy's loaded. Like this family, Ferris Bueller's family was loaded, you know, 16 Candles, Molly Ringwald's family was loaded. We're looking at like they live in mansions. There's something a little alienating about that. I know, look, I love John Hughes. I know you do too. But his movies definitely are catered towards a particular type of person, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's like upper class Chicago. Like that's the recurring theme in these movies. And, you know, when you're a kid and you see like Ferris Bueller playing with all that stuff, that's it's meant to be really cool and you're meant to want all these things. And it's the same thing in this movie with Wyatt and, you know, his computer and his room. And, you know, I think when this came out in 85, you know, these are not things that that I'm, you know, aware of, right? As a child under the age of 10, you know, these are not huge themes. But of course, now it's so evident and you almost can't avoid it. But it does make you you feel a certain way about it. You don't necessarily sympathize with their plight. Outside of them being losers, right? You are still kind of like, all right, well, but you know, you guys come from loving homes. And
right. They really do.
Yeah, things seem to be. I mean, Chet sucks, but like, yeah. He's at military school most of the time.
Yeah, that explains why he's such an asshole.
Yeah. But it's interesting because the sort of the relationship with Gary and Wyatt, like it's pretty solid. Like I totally buy, right? Like these guys are best friends, that they pretty much just hang out with each other. And Gary occasionally embellishes like, oh, I've got a girlfriend in Canada.
Which he also has in Breakfast Club as well.
Right. It's a big thing. It's a big theme. There's always a girlfriend in Canada. it's one of my favorite sort of callbacks in Avenue Q, the musical, which is the kind of a really messed up Sesame Street.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it or heard of it.
I've heard of it, yeah.
It's really, I don't love musicals. I love Avenue Q, but it is like...
That's where Kristen heard Schadenfreude. Yeah, that's where she heard that for the first time.
Yes, that is from that show. But there was a whole song about, you know, my girlfriend who lives in Canada.
Oh, really? That's
funny. An entire song. It's about a, you know, and it's a closeted character basically singing like, no. You know, he just doesn't want to come out of the closet. But it's no different than any of you know, dudes in the 80s being like, yeah, you don't know her. She lives in Canada. Of course, like in today's day and age, you know, that's why social media. What's her handle? Let's check her out. Oh, yeah. She doesn't exist.
Wish you could meet my girlfriend who lives in Canada. She couldn't be sweeter. I wish you could meet her, my girlfriend who lives in Canada. Her name is Alberta. She lives in Vancouver. She cooks like my mother and sucks like a Hoover. I email her every single day just to make sure that everything's okay. It's a pity she lives so far away in Canada. Last week she was here, but she had the flu. Too bad, cause I wanted to introduce her to you. It's so sad, there wasn't a thing that she could do but stay in bed with her legs up over her head. Oh! I wish you could meet my girlfriend, but you can't because she is in Canada. I love her, I miss her, I can't wait to kiss her. So soon I'll be off to Alberta. I mean Vancouver. Shit, her name is Alberta. She lives in Vancouver. She's my girlfriend, my wonderful girlfriend. Yes, I have a girlfriend who lives in Canada. And I can't wait to eat her pussy again.
Before anyone jumps down my throat, I want to point out quickly, because people might say like, well, what about Pretty in Pink and, you know, all the other movies where like maybe the characters didn't or were not as privileged. John Hughes only directed like 6 movies. He produced a lot of movies.
Right.
He directed Weird Science, obviously, and 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, She's Having a Baby, Uncle Buck, and Curly Sue. That's it.
But your point is still like Pretty in Pink. They're wealthy people. They're wealthy kids.
Yeah.
James Spader, Andrew McCarthy. They're wealthy kids.
Right. Right.
It's that same world.
I think Curly Sue was a not a very, you know, down on her luck.
Yeah, well, then that was so much later, too. Like, that wasn't even, right, what was that, 90?
91.
It's like that. I don't think I saw that. I may have. I don't know. It's the, I don't remember a thing about it, nor do I have any desire to watch it.
No.
It's a totally different thing.
You're right. You're right. I'm just saying out of the movies that he directed versus producing, because he produced so many. But yeah. They did follow that similar formula. I feel like Some Kind of Wonderful is the one that stands out to me as being the one that breaks that mold.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Eric Stoltz's character, Blue Collar. And Watts. Mary...
Stuart Masterson.
Mary Stuart Masterson. I was like, Mary Elizabeth Master Antonio. Nope. Mary... You ever notice how all actresses named Mary have three names?
Yeah, who's the one from Sneakers? Oh, that's Mary McDonald.
Okay, that's an exception.
She broke the mold.
Yeah. I'm sure there are more Marys, but anyway, I always feel like there's like, like three.
Well, I thought she had three names.
Yeah.
I was like, is it Mary McDonald?
Mary McDonald Donald.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
But anyway, I just think that your point is correct, because we're still in that world of have and have nots.
Yeah. This is a lot of that.
Sometimes the have nots, you know, they emotionally are have nots, but they are financially haves. But then, you know, they create Lisa, and Lisa gives them whatever they want, right? So they've
cars,
got
whatever they
Ferraris, want. They with their license plates. But it is funny, because it is kind of like this weird, it's like they've got essentially like 48 hours of this magic.
Yeah.
Which would be that Mary Poppins aspect to it, you know, which would be, I don't know if this would make it a better movie to know that, right? Or to be like, no, probably not, right? If Lisa was like, oh, I'm only going to be around for 48 hours. We can do whatever we want.
Well,
let's do it.
It would create a sense of urgency. That's a good point you bring up. There's one moment in this movie that was changed. There's one version of this movie where there's a scene at the end, the big party, where the Mad Max guys come in and raid the place, right? Start taking over.
All,
right.
All of our favorites. We got Vernon Wells in there.
Michael Berryman.
Michael Berryman in there.
So
who's,
great.
Who's the third guy?
Third guy's got, he's covered in metal and you know, he's, I wouldn't say he's a known genre actor.
Yeah.
He plays one of the mutant bikers, right?
Yeah. You know, at the party.
Yeah. I mean, he looks like a, straight out of Mad Max, which that's the homage, obviously. But in the one version of this movie where the soon-to-be girlfriends of Gary and Wyatt are being accosted by the biker gang, mm-hmm. and there's one version where Gary and Wyatt know that this is a creation of Lisa. So the tip-off is when they make a joke about these guys shower, you know, the bikers are like, these guys, you know, shower with their shoes on, with the
their jeans on.
And yes. And that's there's a version where Gary and Wyatt, like, know, that's when they realize, oh, this is Lisa's creation. So they know that, so they show off in front of their friends and impress everybody by pulling the guns out and, you know, saving the day. But the main version of it is when Gary and Wyatt have to find the courage within themselves to save the day.
Right.
So I'm just pointing that out, because this movie could be a totally different kind of movie if you put a timeline on it of 48 hours, right? Let's go wild for 48 hours. And then you know she's going to leave. There wouldn't be the emotional pull like they have at the end with her when they're saying goodbye and they got tears in their eyes.
Right. You know, like a Cinderella effect or something. Yeah. Like, you know, at midnight on this day, all the magic wears off.
And that was the theatrical version, by the way. Apparently in the theatrical release, according to IMDb, scene included shows, and it was omitted from TV and home video.
Hmm. Okay. I did not see this in the theater.
Neither did I.
It seems interesting to have them know that Lisa's doing this, but it's like, of course Lisa's doing this, because, and guys, I'm sorry if you're lost, but basically the movie ends, you got to see the movie, you got to see it. But, the movie ends with this, you know, with this party, and the whole thing is like Gary and Wyatt they never stand up for themselves, right? They don't stand up to bullies. They just try and be big shots and stuff like that, but they're never really face their fears. So she creates this whole kind of scenario in which bikers crash the party, terrorize everybody there, and then they have to kind of stand up to them. But it's like, if you were a guest at that party, I was looking at this now and being like, well, wouldn't the guests be like, oh, these guys clearly set this up because yeah. the odds of bikers coming through. And what I love about this movie too, is that everybody that kind of enters a space that where the camera's already established, there is some kind of great, usually like steam or fog.
Yeah.
And like the most amazing lighting, right? There's either like Lisa's created and there's like this red light, you know, that's in the doorway. These guys enter and it's just like a blue, almost like a blue jungle. Like they're just coming out of, you know, a spaceship or something. It's almost like E.T. landed in the woods and these guys came out of this spaceship with right. E.T. or something. But yes, you know, of course, like you suspend all reality is just basically suspended from the time that Lisa shows up. So anything that happens is kind of like, okay, we're just in like magic dream time.
I think that's why I like this movie so much, because it is such a fantasy. And so many of John Hughes movies are based in reality yeah. and it's a dramedy, you know, for lack of a better term. This one is straight up bonkers fantasy movie. You know, it pairs well with my science project. Personally, I think it would make a nice double feature because that's also straight up sci-fi bonkers fantasy. But
right. This... And not to interrupt you, but that is what we have touched on, that this summer of 85 being the summer of science.
Yes.
Because you also had Real Genius.
That's right.
As well.
Oh my God.
It was very in Hollywood, teenage science.
Teenage science and nerdy white kids are always play really well. So
nerdy raunchy.
And yep. Anthony Michael Hall, I know I said Bill Paxton is one of the highlights for sure, but Anthony Michael Hall is gold in this. You know, Robert Downey Jr., Robert Russler told the whole story about RDJ getting cast in this and their connection. But man, Anthony Michael Hall, you saw that in 16 Candles, but you see a side of him in this. You're like, this guy is a freaking star.
Yes.
And you can tell when there's a scene in the movie where Gary and Wyatt and Lisa go to a blues bar and they're surrounded by the locals at the bar. One of them being Steve James, of course, from American Ninja. So there's a nice mm-hmm. little connection there with Judy Aronson, also from an American Ninja. And it's so funny because you can tell the actors are trying not to lose it, because they're in the middle, just like the scene at the end when Chet is getting in Lisa's face, you know, before he gets turned into the giant turd. That scene also is gold, and I want to talk about that with you too.
Yeah.
But man, like, Anthony Michael Hall is just so, he's carrying that entire scene, and there's just everybody in that scene looks like they're probably pinching themselves to not laugh.
Fast man, let me tell you my story, man. Last year, I was insane for this crazy little eighth grade bitch.
Okay? Crazy, insane?
Insane?
Crazy?
I was nuts for the woman, man. Now you gotta believe me. I'm saying, I'm telling the truth here. I'm speaking to you. I mean, I was nuts for the girl. And what did it to me was these big titties she had. For a 13-year-old girl, man. She wouldn't have to worry about no titties for the rest of her life, boy. You know, she was set and she was looking good, son.
That's the truth, baby.
I called every night for like a month. I mean, I'm talking devotion, man.
Every damn night?
Every night, Mitch. I ain't playing with
on
you.
On the telephone?
What this boy talking about? On the telephone, man.
Explain it
what
to
the
hell?
Goddamn, we know there's a telephone, boy. What the hell thing I doing?
But he hung up on her.
Oh, you didn't hang up on her. The chick with those big, big titties?
Man, you did. Man, you know, now here's the capper. You know what the bitch did to me?
Play it on.
Check this shit out. Listen to what she did to me.
She need you in the nuts and called him faggot in front of everybody.
No. She did what?
Bitch need your nuts?
Bitch need my nuts, bitch. I'm not playing with you either, man.
In the family jewel?
In the family jewel, man.
Worst pain there is.
Broke my heart in two.
You broke more than your heart.
The Gary and Wyatt relationship, you know, Wyatt is a little younger, and he's just like the straight man. He really is just like the straight man. Like, things just kind of happen to him, but he's not, there's such a difference in the two, like, you know, like the two guys are the leads, but it's like Anthony Michael Hall is doing so much at all times with everything that he's given. He's given like a little look sometimes. You know, he's just like, he raises his eyebrows, his bangs fly back, you know,
right.
And it's just like, he does so much with so little sometimes, and it's phenomenal. And it's those moments that, and he's talking so fast half the time, like, you know, like he's spitting out words, multiple words, just riffing on multiple ideas. You know, it's almost like his role in this, you know, despite him like being a nerd, you know, you do see him. I remember feeling like this guy is a cool guy because he is very confident in kind of not being confident in a way, like, but he exudes this confidence the entire movie.
Yeah. A perfect example of what you're talking about is the scene in the shower when Gary and Wyatt are talking to each other.
Well, they're in the shower a lot. So I think what you're talking about is when the camera's close up on the mouths and it's the fast talking back and forth. They're making a plan with the girls.
Yeah, at the party when Hilly and Deb are in the bathroom with them, and they excuse them. The girls ask if they can have a moment alone, and the boys don't leave the bathroom. Yeah. They just go in the shower behind them.
Right.
And it's a great moment. It's so great because... And Elon Mitchell Smith, he's a good actor. I'm not discrediting him at all, but you're right. He's the straight man. He plays that really well. And he was totally opposite type when I saw him in The Wildlife, because in The Wildlife, he's big in a nom and he smokes cigarettes and he's mouthing off.
He's Jim, the potential school shooter kid.
yeah. Go listen to that episode where we talked about The Wildlife. But in this, Anthony Michael Hall owns those scenes so well. And especially that one in the shower.
Yeah. I mean, even moments like when they get the slushy poured on them, you know, like where he's just like, you know, and they are basically like, you know, it's the first time in my life I don't feel like a total dick. And then the bullies drop a slushy on them. And it's like they're really owning that humiliation, you know, in a lot of ways. I mean, just even jumping back, the movie starts off with these guys. It's like... You know what kind of movie this is immediately because the tone is set. We're in gym class. It's a girls' gym class. And the boys are watching the girls basically doing gymnastics, you know, hanging around.
Do you know what I would like to do?
Shower with them.
Then, bang, we hit the city, baby, dead on. For little drinks, little nightlife, little dancing.
Yes.
Throw a huge party. I mean, huge party. Everybody's invited. Women everywhere. All these girls, they're all there. Naked bodies everywhere. They all know
Gary.
My name. What?
Nobody likes us. Nobody.
Why are you messing with the fantasy? We know about the reality. Don't ruin the fantasy, okay?
But they are, you know, fantasizing about this life that they might have if, you know, girls like them and all this stuff. And of course, they get pantsed. This is like the first, you know, minute of the movie. They get pantsed by the bullies and their reactions. Like, they don't immediately pull up their pants. They kind of hang there. They hang there. They look. You know, Wyatt is like, he's going to like maybe explain what happened. And Gary just puts his mouth over Wyatt, pulls him out. It's like, it really is like one of my favorite 80s openings. And then the music starts, you know?
Yeah, it's so great because you don't see movies open that way.
Right. No. No. And you clearly, we've established in 2 minutes, these guys are losers. This is everyone else. These, you know, these are the dynamics. And Wyatt's the guy who's going to be like, excuse us, ladies, like my pants. He's like, nope, let's get the fuck out of here. Like, yeah.
That scene in particular is so, it's a perfect time capsule of the 80s because they look like teenagers, finally. They look like legit teenagers. Everybody does.
Right.
Like the girls look like teenage girls. The boys have pimples. The girls do too. You know, they don't have the perfect teeth. They don't have the perfect hair. Like even so-called, you know, kind of rough around the edges teen comedies, like American Pie, for example, you know, that was the moment where everything for me, I think people were getting too pretty, you know?
Right.
And this was like so refreshing to see this is what people look like back then.
Right.
You know, and we don't get that anymore, which is a shame. And this movie, I don't think could get made now because of just a few of the problematic things we pointed out earlier.
Right. Well, it couldn't be like, let's make a sexual object, you know, a woman for, you know, sexual purposes or whatever. Like the whole thing is really, that was what was happening in the 80s, Porky's, et cetera. Like that was just what it was. It was like dudes trying to get laid. That was every, you know, teen comedy in the 80s.
Well, then they made a TV show based on Weird Science, which tried to flip the script just slightly, you know? I mean, that show lasted, it was on for like 4 seasons, which is kind of shocking to me, but
it wasn't that good, which is great. You know, like I think it's very shocking.
I think it excelled because of Weird Science. You know, it doesn't get talked a lot now, you know. Revenge of the Nerds gets brought up all the time as, oh, you can't make that movie now. That movie's rapey and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And we already talked about that in the Revenge of the Nerds episode. This movie doesn't really get brought up in that way.
No, it really doesn't. And when you look at how it was not for lack of popularity or anything like that, because it did open, I think it was like 35th at the box office that year, right? Like, which is pretty high.
Yeah.
Like it's up there. It made like $23, $24 million. You know, worldwide, but I think, domestically. But you're right. I don't think that this movie has a lot of like parts to it. You know, it really just kind of has, you know, like 3 main scenes. Of course, like watching it now, I'm like, oh, you know, There's your language that we don't like so much, right? There's
Gary utters some lines at the party that he calls a woman something you should never call a woman, and he uses the F word, and I'm not talking about the 4-letter one. You know, right.
Whoa. You're talking about when he's just like, why don't you shut up, bitch?
Yes, exactly.
Right. And like, but
and
like
I laughed at that scene originally back in the day. Right. And I kind of laughed when I saw
this. Because you're kind of cheering when he says it, you know, in the 80s. You're like, yeah, he told that this poor slave girl who's got like, you know, fucking chains around her neck. We don't even know how she got in this scenario. What a funny scenario. And she giggles, and he's like, why don't you shut up, bitch? And you're like, oh, that's not very nice.
And then he calls the quote, rhymes with maggot, friends.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And to Vernon Wells and Mike, and I'm like, damn.
Right. John Hughes. Like, what? Whoa, dude.
Haven't heard this since Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, actually.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, it's really everywhere, and you don't remember that because it was just part of the vernacular. That's just how everyone talked. And of course, a lot of the country would say that us not saying those words is too woke, right? Like, oh, they're just, we can't say our words. We can't say our, you know, our precious words that we said in the 80s anymore.
you're right. You're not wrong.
No, like that, as I feel like a lot of people's approach, you know, and we've talked about it, right? The use of the word retarded, you can't really just be throwing that word around, but yet that word was everywhere in the 80s. That was on the Facts of Life, Mrs. Garrett said it. You know, like, it's like, right. That's what it was, guys.
Right. No, it's crazy how movies and TV shows get brought up, and now, and you're like, oh, but, you know, you can't watch this anymore. I don't agree with that at all. I feel like you can totally watch everything now. No problem. Just have some conscious awareness of what you're watching and how some of these things are not okay. Would I watched this movie when I was 10. Would I show Bodhi this movie? Not yet.
Right. Well, because you feel differently about it. Like it is that, like I, when we talk about the big picture of like, does this movie hold up? I don't know.
I think this movie changed for me. I think when I was a kid, it played out like just a teen comedy. Now I look at it as a skit. It's a bit.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a novelty. I feel like this movie's a novelty movie. You know,
it's a good way to put it.
I want to dial it back really quick to Bill Paxton. Just the moments when, of course, there's a scene where he sees Gary in Lisa's underwear and he gets really upset about that. But the scene at the end when he's reprimanding Gary and Wyatt with their girlfriends, they're now girlfriends because they're in love because they've known each other for 5 minutes, which is very much a teenage thing.
Yep.
The banter back and forth that he has with Kelly LeBrock is so good. I don't want to underscore her performance too, because she's fantastic.
Yeah.
I want to be alone with Chet here.
Good to see you again, Chet. Get out of here. Come on, take your little hussies home. The parents are probably worried sick. Lady, I want to get to the bottom of this. ASAFP.
Oh, so do I.
But first, I'd like to butter your muffin.
Why do you have to be such a wanker?
Because I get off on it.
Now, I want you to promise that you'll keep your big mouth shut about everything that has happened here this weekend. And I want you to treat Wyatt and Gary with dignity and respect.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, really. I can be a real serious bitch if I don't get what I want.
Ooh, hit me with your best shot.
I had only seen her in The Woman in Red, I think, at that point, and she was a model for the most part. She's so freaking good, and she comes across in a perfect way of, like, being really sexy, but also, like, tough, too.
Right.
Which is not something that was always pulled off very well.
This is pre-Steven Seagal.
Because Kristen said to me, she's like, whatever happened to her? And I go, well, at one point she was, I don't know if she was married to him, but she was dating Steven Seagal.
Oh, yeah, they were married.
Oh, and Kristen goes, oh, really? Yeah, we all make mistakes, folks. We all make mistakes.
But that's, you know, that's all in hindsight, because they were like a power couple, you know, sorts, right? It wasn't like anyone was saying that at that point. But to your point about... Well, first of all, about Bill Paxton, yes, absolutely. Hard, like Chet, yes, hard to kill. Maybe when he plays Nico, that character.
Nico is in Above the Law.
Oh, Nico's Above the Law, of course. what's his hard to kill character's name?
I don't know.
Chief. I don't know. He's Chief on Under Siege.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, to your point, Chet is phenomenal. Bill Paxton's phenomenal. We look back at this, you know, like I'm a kid. I'm like, oh man, he's terrible. Like, oh, he's just so mean. He's just such a bully. But it is like a sketch, right? Because he is so over the top and so amazing. Nice panties. You're just like, oh man, you know?
And his
everything
hair,
that
too.
He says, and clearly, right in the end, like everybody is cracking up. Like no one can keep a straight face because he's just saying things, you know, like donkey dick and just all these things that are so funny.
That's
and
not
I love
a bad
that,
thing
you know,
too, by the way.
No, and I know that Hughes kept that in. but Lisa too, Kelly LeBrock is amazing because you're right. Like she is, you know, like when Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Russell's character, when they see her on the escalator there and they're like, oh man, that girl, she kind of gives them a look. They run over to her and they're like, hey, saw you looking at us. And she's like, yeah. You know,
I know, I love
and
that.
Like she always has the power and the control in the relationship. It is weird because she's ultimately just like just trying to have the most fun at all times, it kind of seems like, because later then she is cool with them, you know, at the party,
right?
Like, you know, like You'd want her to just be dicks to them the entire time?
Does anything have to do, you think, with the fact that these kids are like 16 years old, or is that just irrelevant?
Like, I think it's irrelevant. Okay. I think it's irrelevant.
Yeah, it's irrelevant at this time. I mean, nowadays you look at that and you're like, this is not okay. I mean, that's the biggest issue that I think maybe I would have with it.
Right. Or you just look at it like, you know, she's a robot or she's an android or she's just a magical creature that just happens to seem like she's 23 years old. Either way.
She's a unicorn.
I don't see her as a human at any point, you know, so.
By the way, Steven Seagal's name in Hard to Kill was Mason Storm.
Okay. I feel like his partner is spending a lot of time going, Storm.
Yeah.
You got to get back here.
Quick plug to Podcasting After Dark. I did an interview with William Sadler, who was in Hard to Kill. He's the main bad guy. He tells an amazing story about Steven Seagal.
Oh, yeah. Isn't he naked in it?
He's naked.
At one point?
He does naked Tai Chi, I think.
Naked
Die Hard
something, right?
2. I think in Die Hard 2.
Oh, Die Hard 2? Okay.
Yeah, but I actually, in the early days of our Instagram stuff, I put a picture, your face, on his naked Tai Chi body.
Okay.
Yeah. Go call the annals of our Instagram for that. But no, William Sadler told a story about Steven Seagal wanting to just like eviscerate his character. And the director's like, you can't. You're the hero. You can't like. And he's like, and then I want to piss on him.
I want to piss on him.
Yeah, something like that. Anyways, if you're you know, interested, go check out that interview that Corey and I did on with William Sadler, because that was a funny story. We did that like beginning of the pandemic. So any other notes that you want to talk about in regards to Weird Science before we jump into the soundtrack?
Great question. You know, just this idea. Well, I guess two things. One was, you know, that they use the computer to make a girl. This is obviously pre-internet. They're able to just tap into like a mainframe somewhere by dialing in, because you could connect computers via phone line at this point.
Crazy.
The internet had certainly kind of just been invented, I think, but like it wasn't public. But I don't know why tapping into the computer every time they're trying to, you know, make a girl, because they make Lisa and then they try again later to make, you know, a girl for their buddies now. Their bullies are their buddies. The laws of physics and gravity and everything like changes. And I know like there's a storm, and is the storm randomly there, and that's what does lightning strike and cause this? Or it seems like tapping into the computer causes the lightning. The weather events, dogs are on the ceiling. Like all these things happen, and it's like visually very cool, but you're like, but what's going on? It's like the space-time continuum somehow breaks via, you know, a personal computer in a kid's house. And that just makes you want to like, you know, like I remember being like, oh, what can my computer do? And you're like, oh, I can play like Minesweeper. And
Minesweeper.
You know, that's it.
Could play Prince of Persia.
Load Runner.
I played Load Runner.
On the, yeah. On the, that was my favorite game, Load Runner.
I had a Texas Instrument thing for a minute that could play Frogger, and you plugged it into your boombox. It was a cassette tape. You put the cassette tape in the boombox, and you plug this little keypad into the boombox, and then it also went into your TV. And you could play video games via your boombox on a cassette tape.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways.
That's right. So you couldn't make a woman on that.
I think to your point, or to the question you're asking, I think the answer is the internet felt like magic.
Right.
Like, how are we able to do all this stuff? How are we able to send signals through space? I'm still fascinated by that shit, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
That there's this invisible thing that we just accept, right?
And like, the amount of time that it takes between, you know, like you to think of something and it to appear
on your phone.
It's like no time at all. But right.
So it's
like
magic.
In the 80s, the idea of doing anything on the phone. But like it would be like if you were like Googling something and then also, you know, a piano got sucked up into a chimney. Like I just, you know, like I, that's what I don't quite, you know, right? Like we have a Anyway.
Yeah, well, and also that to that point about the piano getting sucked up, there's a lot of nudity in this movie. There's a lot of boobs. Boobs were everywhere in this movie. Big boobs, little boobs, boobs just across the boobs.
There were some boobs.
Centerfold boobs were popular. Like Just One of the Guys, another movie we've talked about. Yeah. I believe that was 1985 as well, right?
But like if this was like really raunchy, like it would have had like Gary and Wyatt just like looking at the girl's locker room or something in the beginning, you know, like just like, but it's still, it's politely leery. It's like, but it's also very obvious that they're standing there. But anyway.
Yeah. I just want to point out that another PG-13 movie with a bunch of boobs. But do you think this would be PG-13 now, or would this be rated R?
Well, no, because you can't have a 15-year-old boy and a 23-year-old woman in a PG-13. Like anything that's like going to, you know,
yeah, you're right.
Incite more questions.
You can't do that. You can't do it now.
You can't do it.
It's got to be college. And at that point now.
Yeah. But if Gary and Wyatt are 18, then it's fine. It's like, you know, and then all is forgiven. That's what they could have just done. But they had to be more losery because, you know, I don't know.
They're like they're sophomores. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just the last thing was I'm always kind of interested in what Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah,
and sort of said, Roger Ebert gave this 3 out of 4 stars, really enjoyed it, but comments that Hall was the, quote, geek in 16 Candles, the intellectual in Breakfast Club, and he likes, and this is him talking, this is not me, he says, and I like John Hughes' definition of a geek. A geek is a guy who has everything going for him, but he's just too young. By contrast, a nerd will be a nerd all of his life.
Interesting.
I've never heard anything presented in that way. I've never thought of the difference between a geek and a nerd. It's more of a, I don't know, found it very thought-provoking. Like a geek.
Yeah.
You're a geek, but you're just too young. You have everything going for you. So that kind of speaks to like the privilege thing. You're kind of ahead of your time.
Right.
You have everything going for you. Like a Mark Zuckerberg, right? Yeah. Who's by all accounts a geek, then ages into the money, the women, the fame.
Right.
Right? There are geeks that do that. And then there's just nerds. You're just nerds forever. I don't know. I'm going to think more on this, but.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Let us know.
Yeah.
In our, I think you can leave comments now on Spotify, which is kind of cool if you're listening to us on Spotify, or let us know on our Instagram posts or social media. What's your definition of a geek and a nerd? Do you agree with Roger Ebert? Would you call Roger Ebert a movie nerd?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. I got to think about that. It got me pondering.
We're on the Geekscape network. We're not on the Nerdscape network.
Yeah, we're cool. We're young. We're still...
Something about Geekscape.
Nerdscape doesn't sound as well.
Nerdscape sounds terrible. If you are like, Geekscape would imply all these things that you liked as kids, you've aged into them, they're totally acceptable, and you are, you know, you've aged into your everything going for you.
Yeah, interesting. Would you call 80s Kids Unite the Night Boys? Are we geeks or are we nerds?
I think there's a lot of nerdiness to it.
There is a lot of nerdiness. If you're wondering what we're talking about, we have a new show that we previewed it in January, our Comic-Con panel that we aired from December. You heard it in January, and later this month you're going to hear 80s Kids Unite. It's our new show that features Dustin and myself, Corey from Podcasting After Dark, Paul London from Territory Marks, Diallo Jackson from TV Obscura. The three of us, Dustin, myself, and Corey, will be regulars, and Paul and Diallo will come in from time to time, and we'll be sharing 80s nostalgia on things that hit or don't hit from our childhood youth. And I don't know. We nerd out on that for sure.
It's like all the topics, all the genres of pop culture, 80s pop culture. But the great thing is that if you join our Patreon, you can suggest the topic and then the five of us will go deep into it. If you head on over to patreon.com/$2 late fee, you can sign up and then you can suggest stuff, and then we'll do it, and then we'll go deep, and then you will also, then we'll go deep. Ah, that's what she said. No, and then we'll give you top credit, guys. You'll get the shout out. The episode will be sort of, you know, a little commercial for you. So yeah. We invite everybody to join up, and we're excited. It's a totally new segment.
Perfect segue too, because on our Patreon, one of the segments, one of the options we have on Patreon is our a mix CD. And at the highest tier, you can sign up on our Patreon and get a mix CD from us every 6 months, and which the mix CD features music that we've had on the show that we've talked about. This soundtrack in particular, Weird Science from 1985, is interesting. It's kind of an Iron Eagle moment for me, because the songs in the movie, or lack thereof, not all of them are featured on the actual physical soundtrack.
Yeah.
So, obviously Weird Science by Oingo Boingo is the song. It's got to be the song. I'd say that song is a universally loved quintessential 80s hit. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, not only that, it was like, this was Oingo Boingo's most successful song.
Yeah.
Hands down. It's off. It was, obviously on the soundtrack, but also off of the Dead Man's Party album, in sort of a longer mix of it. Dead Man's Party featured in Back to School, starring Rodney Dangerfield. We haven't talked about that. I feel like we have.
We talked about it a little bit in the Bully episode, I believe.
But comes up. But yeah, Danny Elfman, when I think of this movie, there's only one song that I think of. And it's this one. It's Weird Science by Oingo Boingo. That's it. Weird science.
There's a reason for that, because the version we saw, you and I, mostly the TV version, the home video version, replaced Weird Science with other songs in the movie. So in the mall scene where Pretty Woman by Van Halen plays, which is not on the soundtrack, by the way, they replaced that song with the Weird Science song in the TV and home video versions back in the day.
Weird Science was playing in the theatrical version?
In the theatrical version, in the mall scene when Kelly LeBrock is going up the escalator
and sees
Rustler and Downey.
Yeah.
Pretty Woman by Van Halen is playing in the theatrical version. That's the version that is now on streaming, physical media. By the way, Arrow Blu-ray put out a great version of Weird Science with the theatrical version, the television version.
Is that the one that you own?
I do own that, because the slipcover is really beautiful too. It's just a beautiful piece of art. And there's a great booklet inside with a bunch of fun facts and whatnot. So,
okay. You're saying that every version is on this Blu-ray?
Every version is on this Blu-ray.
Yeah. Okay.
So the TV version, the edited TV version, which included two extra scenes, there's a group of guys in the party that Lisa's talking to. They're referred to as the Weenies. The Weenies. Bunch of random white kids. There's a scene of them rolling up to the party wearing Devo hats. And there's an extended scene with Gary and Wyatt in the having breakfast at one point. But my main point is, in the theatrical version of Weird Science, Kelly LeBrock's going up the escalator. Songs Pretty Woman by Van Halen's playing. In the home video and TV versions that came out in the 80s, that song was replaced with the Weird Science song by Oingo Boingo.
Interesting. Okay.
And then at the end of the movie, when Lisa has left the boys and she's now the new PE coach for their school, the theme to Rocky is playing, right? In the theatrical version.
Right.
And in the TV and home video versions, they play Weird Science again.
Okay.
Before they kick into Weird Science with the credits.
Again.
Yes. So that's probably why you associate this. One of the reasons, it could be one of the reasons why you associate this song so much. Or like think, oh, that's the only song I heard in the movie.
Never really thought about the Rocky cue there.
It's very random.
It is.
And I feel like the soundtrack is very random.
You're right. I mean, it is. I also think it's weird that is she the PE coach at their school? And it was.
Yeah.
But I thought she had just like moved on in like some other school, which would have, it's kind of, I always thought of it.
It's a little problematic that she's going to be seeing them every day.
Right. Like they still go to school. They haven't graduated.
Yeah. And also too, you know, we talked about like she makes out with Wyatt. She had wanted to have sex with Wyatt, but Wyatt fell asleep.
Right.
So. She would have had sex with him.
I mean, that was like her, you know, she's like, well, that's what I'm created for. You created me. So what are you thinking about? Women's gymnastics. All right, I'll see what I can do.
Right.
Like, I tried and then you fell asleep. Right. So I painted my nails. It's like, wow. I never really put that together either. I was like, what the hell?
Right. This is,
wanting to have sex with this little guy?
And I also, you pointed out, Dead Man's Party is in Back to School. And then their song Just Another Day, Oingo Boingo's Just Another Day, is in That Was Then, This Is Now, which is not on their soundtrack, but that song's still, it's my favorite. That's my personal favorite Oingo Boingo song. What's your favorite Oingo Boingo song?
I don't know. I mean, I think I like Just Another Day better than Weird Science, but I don't know. Weird Science is pretty ingrained in my brain.
Weird Science is a movie theme. It's a theme song. It's like Ghostbusters.
It is. Oingo Boingo has a good discography. They were formed in 1979. Crazy, wow. Man.
I just want to point out really quickly too. So the soundtrack, the physical soundtrack, has songs by Wall of Voodoo, Lords of the New Church.
Do you have it on vinyl?
I do not.
Oh.
But David Irons, who's a patron of our show, he's a friend of our show. He's an amazing writer. Go check out David Irons' books on Amazon. David actually asked me to get him. I got him a copy of the Weird Science soundtrack on cassette.
Okay.
And mailed it out to him overseas because he's over in the UK. Shout out to our homie, David Irons. I don't know. The soundtrack, the physical soundtrack has, how do you say this name? C-H-E-Y-N-E? Chaney? Chaney?
C-H-E-Y-N-E?
Yeah.
Chaney?
Chaney? She's like a pop singer.
Okay.
Anyways, that physical soundtrack had all these songs on it, right? But if you watch the movie, the only songs that you really hear, you hear a couple songs on the radio, one by Kim Wilde, which is called Turn It On. It's not the way it was. Must be the way it talks. Turn it on. Turn it on. Baby, turn it on. Maybe you need me. Turn it on. When I'm weak, baby, make me strong. Oh, when you're gone, I get lost. Baby, I go wrong. So turn it on. Let it loose. Baby, all night long. If you need me. Turn It On by Kim Wilde, which is a cool song, by the way. I think that song's really cool. And I believe you hear another song by Max Carl called The Circle. A circle along most circles.
Okay. Kim Wilde, by the way, you know, she's most known for that song Kids in America.
Yeah, which I love. And actually, yeah. The Kim Wilde song that's in this movie is really good, but it's buried under them talking. you know, unlike a movie like Rocky IV, where it just highlights every single song. It's almost like a musical in that way. This one doesn't do that. They play a Los Lobos song, Don't Worry Baby. I mean, that's cool, but it's like, is that a song that you would hear at a party in the 80s? I don't know. I dig that song, but I wouldn't hear that at a party. Mm-hmm. And then Living in the 80s by the band Killing Joke. That's played during the party as well. And it's just for like a split second. I don't feel like this movie, John Hughes is so good. If you think of Breakfast Club, his use of music in Breakfast Club and in Pretty in Pink and Some Kind of Wonderful, fantastic.
I think the song is just called 80s, by the way.
Oh,
sorry, not to interrupt.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because they're just saying, I think it's, yeah, because they say.
I think the lyrics are Living in the 80s.
Living in the 80s. But yeah, you're right. You're right. Thank you for the correction. I don't know. His movies typically aren't like heavy hitters when it comes to soundtracks overall. They're just kind of like understatements. You know, he's got maybe one song, Weird Science, that stands out. But other than that, it's kind of like, meh, I could kind of go without it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not to make this about like a John Hughes going down the line or something. Breakfast Club.
Well, yeah.
Don't You Forget About Me, right? That's there is like one song that people are like.
He always has one big song.
Yeah.
Unlike Fast Times at Ridgemont High or Valley Girl that have these like, you know, very strong
more,
teenager soundtrack, teenage centric. Yeah.
Right.
That's all.
Right. No, I'm with you. And you know, you would think because John Hughes is such a part of the studio system, right? Like Universal Studios, whatever. You would think that these soundtracks would have more weight, clout, tie-ins, all these things that go behind the scenes about that.
That's interesting because it makes me think of 3 o'clock High, where Phil Joano told that story in our interview that Steven Spielberg had like a list of all these 80s bands he wanted to feature in the movie, and they end up going with Jim Walker's song, and the rest of the movie is Tangerine Dream. So. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But just like, you know, how much budget do we have?
Right.
They have a lot of budget.
Right.
They got a lot of money to, you know, presumably get whatever song they want. Artists are coming out. We can do tie-ins, whatever. It is interesting to think about it from that way. If John Hughes was operating from the idea of like, I'm going to, you know, put music at the forefront. And that's not really how he works as a director.
No.
So
it's more story.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I mean, that's pretty much the soundtrack in a nutshell. You know, Weird Science, Oingo Boingo. Obviously, we love that song.
Yeah. I'll just say for anyone who's interested that Weird Science reached number 45 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100, number 21 on the U.S. Dance Club charts. You dance to it. And number 81 in Canada.
What would you rather dance to, Dead Man's Party or Weird Science? I go with Dead Man's Party.
I think Dead Man's Party, yeah.
Definitely. The extended version too, which is so good.
Yeah, I don't even know what kind of dance I would do to Weird Science.
You wouldn't dance to it.
If I was in a club and it came on, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
That's the song you sit down and you just kind of like talk to your friends during that time.
You're like, oh, it's Weird Science. I like this song. You want to dance to it? No. No one.
How do you dance to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da? But Dead Man's Party?
Well, you know, when Weird Science is playing and the storm is going that second time or whatever, they're trying to get to make the second lady. And then the Wyatt's parents, the picture comes to life and they start dancing like weird white people. That's how you dance.
That's how you dance to it.
Yeah.
And actually, I love that moment. I love that moment. And yeah. I love that. I love when Wyatt breaks the fourth wall, looks at the camera when Chet's, you know, chewing him out. It's great. So
Oh yeah. It's funny. I used to love that moment and then I didn't find it to be a true moment.
Oh, really?
No, it doesn't
feel true, but I think I laughed because of the nostalgia.
I was like, oh, weird. Yeah. He just looks at the camera.
Did you ever see The Chocolate War with
yes,
Elon?
Yes.
Did you like it?
I did like it.
Yeah, me too. It came out in 88. I think John Glover is in that, maybe?
Watched it in school. We watched it.
Yeah, it feels like that was like a movie.
A big book.
Yeah, based on the book.
The Times, yep.
Yeah, Chocolate War. Go check that movie out, guys, if you've never seen that. It's good.
Yep. Also, Chocolate Fever. Do you remember that one where a guy gets...
I do.
Chicken pox that tastes like chocolate.
Is it a movie?
No, it's a book. It's a kid's book.
Wait, are you thinking of... You're not thinking of Chocolate Touch, are you?
No.
Because Chocolate Touch is the one where the kid, John Midas, everything he touches turns to chocolate. That's good.
No, Chocolate Fever was originally published in 1972.
Oh, I did. Does he go on... He goes on the run, doesn't he? Like, doesn't he go... Like he runs away from his family or something.
Or
is that Freckle Juice?
Yes. No, you're right. Because what it is like he's in the hospital and then he escapes from the hospital. There's this whole part where.
Because I read that book to my kindergartners. I read Chocolate Touch to my kindergartners and then they loved it so much. I'm like, I think there's another book, Chocolate Fever. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Chocolate Fever. And Freckle Juice is great.
Juice is good too. Yeah. Speaking of sugary things you consume with your body, in February of 1985, Cherry Coke was introduced by Coca-Cola.
Right.
New Cherry Coke, just out and outrageous.
Cherry Coca-Cola.
Check it out and find out. Taste is what it's all about. Outrageously smooth, outrageously light. Cherry makes it wild.
And that was successful.
It was.
Yes.
So successful that some people think Cherry Coke is the superior of all the Cokes.
We talked about this on our pop culture trivia night.
We did.
Because this Cherry Coke was later in the year? 85?
February of 85.
Oh, it was February?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe it was 84, whatever it was, when they went, when New Coke had the, or they went to New Coke and everyone was like, fuck that. And then they went to Classic Coke. Thank goodness. And then Cherry Coke launched. And it was like, yes.
Yeah, Cherry Coke launched. So, yep. They rode that wave for quite some time and then started introducing other flavors. Nowadays, we have like, 10 different Coke flavors, I think, now. And it's regional, too.
A lot of Coke, yeah. You can do vanilla and...
Orange, vanilla Coke.
Anything you want. Yeah. Any kind of Coke you want.
Any kind of Coke. In February of 1985, Cyndi Lauper won Best New Artist at the Grammys.
So Cyndi Lauper won this the same time Cherry Coke came out?
Well, 2 weeks after. No, sorry, a week after. A week after Cherry Coke came out. February 26, 1985, Cyndi Lauper.
And the best new artist is... Oh, Cyndi Lauper.
You've watched enough for it.
What do you think, Mom? I want to thank everybody for this award. There were a lot of people that did it with me. What? And of course, Rick Chertoff, the Hooters, who were my band before I had my band, and my band, of course, because they went out there with me and did it and proved that it could be done. And there's so many people, and I don't think I can get everybody. Oh, I should have wrote the list. And all the World Wrestling Federation, Captain Lou Albano, who has gone on to become a movie star. And of course, Katrine Dominique. Thank you so much. So glad you could drop on.
So when I read that Cyndi Lauper won Best New Artist of in 1985, I'm like, I thought she was around earlier than that, but the Grammys are in February. They're awards from the previous year. I thought Cyndi Lauper had been around a lot longer than that, but I guess not. You know, maybe she came out in 1984.
You're saying that 1984 was Cyndi Lauper's big time?
Yes.
There was no Cyndi Lauper hit in 81 or something?
No.
Okay. Girls Just Want to Have Fun was not, when was that?
She's So Unusual, the album, her first album with Girls Just Want to Have Fun, came out in 1983.
Right. So what's going on?
She won Best New Artist in 1985.
In 1985.
And her album was released in October of 83. So it's way, if it came out like December of 83, maybe they push it to.
So, right. So what's the gap here? What's the coverage? What's the qualifying months
here? My point is the Grammy, all award ceremonies are lame because so often things that you love don't get shit. Case in point, Boogie Nights getting overlooked by Good Will Hunting. I'm not taking anything away from Good Will Hunting, but I believe Boogie Nights is the far superior of those movies. Shawshank Redemption losing to Forrest Gump. These are like, for me personally, Pulp Fiction.
Did you tell me that you haven't seen Good Will Hunting though?
No, I've seen Good Will Hunting.
Oh, okay.
I did see that. And I mean, I thought it was good, but I'm like, I don't quote that movie regularly like I do Boogie Nights.
Right. But I mean, it's just like, you know, it's political.
It's neither here nor there.
It's subjective. It's crazy.
It's so political. I mean, that's the reason why Iron Claw, which we covered on Territory Marks and $2 Late Fee, that's getting no love from award shows. No love. Zero.
Right.
And that's a travesty. If you've not seen Iron Claw yet, it's a very dark, heavy movie, but Paul and I covered it. Dustin and I went to the premiere in Dallas. It's a really well done film, and the acting is top notch. Zac Efron gives a award worthy performance in that film.
Yeah.
I feel like wrestling still is the redheaded stepchild of the industry.
Yeah.
Really quick, February 1985, The Dukes of Hazzard aired its final episode. Woo, baby.
Mm-hmm.
That show went through a lot of ups and downs. And then, I mentioned it at the onset. Breakfast Club came out in February of 85, which is surprising. So a lot of fun, big things came out in 85. Notable moments.
It is surprising. I had the Dukes of Hazzard Matchbox cars.
I had that too. I had the Mego figures that came with the General Lee, and you could put them in the General Lee.
Yeah. Yep. General Lee.
Just a good old boy. Where you were introduced to the names Enos and Cooter.
Yes. I don't think I really watched that show, though. I just really liked the car. Yeah.
Really? I watched it. It was on CBS.
I mean, you watched literally every show. If there's one thing that this podcast has taught me, it's that there's very few things that you didn't see in from 1978 through 1992.
Well, I did not see Young Guy Christian when that came out.
I can't compete. Right, because it barely, I don't think it aired. No. It's an unaired pilot, isn't it?
The pilot did air.
Oh.
But right. It got, you know.
I still got to watch that. It looks good.
Yeah, you have to watch that. If you've not seen Young Guy Christian, ladies and gentlemen, go check that out. Barry Bostwick did a... it's on our Instagram, actually, the intro to the show.
But I bet, so you're saying it aired. I bet if we looked at what else aired that night, we would know exactly why you didn't see that pilot.
Oh, probably.
We'd be like, oh, because the Buck Rogers Thanksgiving episode was on at the same time.
You just popped that theme song in my head.
And that's a good song to end on. Thanks, everybody.
It is.
Good night.
Yeah, Suzanne Snyder next week. 80s Kids Unite, the week after that, Territory Marks, rounds out the month of February. Hope everybody has a great Lunar New Year. Year of the Dragon.
Oh, there we go. Chinese New Year, Tibetan New Year.
Chinese New Year, Tibetan New Year. It's the Year of the Dragon. I am a dragon. Maybe we're going to be covering some dragons in March for Martial Art Madness. Stay tuned for that.
Wouldn't that be something? And hey, guys, if you are so inclined to drop us a rating and a review, we don't always ask to do that, but it does help us and help the show. So if you're listening at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know, wherever you're listening, drop a review. Takes 2 seconds of your time. And we appreciate it.
So don't give out Valentine's this year. Just show your love by giving us love.
Yeah, you know what you should do is go like knock on your neighbor's door and be like, trick or Valentine. And then they'll be like, what's wrong with you? And then you run away.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Valentine. Yes. What?
Yep. Like, I'm Saint Valentine. I am Cupid. And then you just shoot him in the butt with an arrow. Be like, do you just fell in love?
And you are going to jail.
Yep.
But before you go to jail, go to patreon.com/$2 late fee and consider signing up or give us a review. Show us some love. We'll show you love back. You know we do. We love you all. Thank you all for listening. Happy season 5, everybody.
Happy season 5, y'alls. Yeehaw. Yeehaw.
And I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a four... Is it 5-star rating? Don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. We really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFeePodcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.